Blog Talk Radio.
And now a brief message from our sponsor. Reality Books presents Booker T. Washington and the Black Revolution. The author is Marshall Washington Cabinus Abui, the senior great-grandson of Booker T. Washington. Booker T. Washington and the Black Revolution, a message that will change America. Buy your copy today. $20 is all it costs, plus $5 postage and handling. To order your copy of the book written by the great-grandson of Booker T. Washington, Booker T. Washington and the Black Revolution, send a text message. Include your full name and how many books you would like to purchase. Send to area code 706-399-5006. Booker T. Washington and the Black Revolution. A message that will change America. Send your text message, including your full name and how many books you would like to purchase, to area code 706-399-5006.
Well, good evening, everyone. I hope you enjoyed that little beginning musical interlude, Body and Soul with Cab. Me being Cab, my family name is Cabiness, so I've been, throughout my younger life anyway, been known as the nickname of Cab. So that was Body and Soul with Cab. Hope you enjoyed that little interlude. That's me on alto sax. So beginning our show, we definitely want to do a radio check, make sure that we are broadcast. So, Ms. Bianchi, welcome to the show again. We also want to welcome my friend and dear beloved brother, Deez Muhammad Ali, and hopefully others will join us tonight. But, Ms. Bianchi, for a radio check, are you able to hear me?
Yes, I can hear you, and I can hear Jesus Muhammad Ali's heartbeat.
All right. Okay, good. All right, good. Okay, well, great. So, at least we know we're broadcasting, and we want to take this opportunity to invite anyone who's listening via the internet to call in and be on our show tonight to come on and say whatever on your mind. This is Caller's Choice, so you can talk about anything that's on your mind, and we welcome you. And so the number to call is 657-383-0671. That's 657-383-0671. We'll plan to repeat the number in a few minutes in case you had to go and get something to write the number down with. But again, we want to welcome our co-host, Ms. Bianchi, and our dear friend and brother, Deez Muhammad Ali. Well, it's Caller's Choice. I really don't have a topic planned for this evening. I've been looking at the news, and there's nothing really in the news that pertains to the black community that I want to talk about. But I just saw that one of my most popular African-American actresses, Regina King, that she just announced that her 26-year-old son had passed. So I'm offering my condolences to their family, and our prayers and sympathy go out to the family. And can't tell you any more than that as far as any information about, you know, how the young man died. But whenever we lose anyone, especially our younger generation, it always touches me deeply, because my younger brother died at a young age when he was only 30 years old. And so I really feel for that family, the King family. Regina King, African-American actress. But anyway, it's the other thing I've seen, and I am concerned about it, and I talked about it just briefly last week, and that's what's going on over in the Ukraine. And it looks like that the Russians are going to invade the Ukraine. They have 100,000 or more troops towards right on the border of Ukraine. And surely they have a lot of munitions, military vehicles, rockets, et cetera, on stage right there ready to move. So it seems like it's inevitable that Ukraine is going to be invaded by Russia very soon. Now, one thing I just found out looking at a map of Ukraine is that half of the Ukrainians speak Russian, because, you know, Russia actually controlled Ukraine when they were part of the Soviet Union, when Ukraine was part of the Soviet Union for decades, and was one of the most important assets of the Soviet Union for a number of reasons, their mineral resources as well as their ports, which Ukraine had a couple of very important Navy ports there, Navy bases there. And so there are various reasons why Putin wants to establish hegemony over Ukraine again, and he looks like he's going to do it. And the thing that concerns me is that Putin is stubbing his nose at the United States, because the only thing we're doing is offering these threats. But one thing I learned, being a professional military student and also a military professional, is that one of the most unwise things that any general will ever do, or any politician representing a country will do, is make threats. You just don't do that, because people don't respond to threats except to thumb the nose at the threats. What you do is you let them know that your position is don't do that, and then you leave it alone. And if they do it, then you respond with whatever necessary retaliation or force or pushback that you feel will get the job done of getting them to stop doing whatever they're doing. But you don't tell them what you're going to do. And, you know, as I hear our current president making all these threats, and I see Putin just smirking, looking like, man, who is this clown telling me? And I'm not calling the president a clown. I'm talking like if I was Putin telling me what to do over here on my side of the world. No, I think if the United States insists by helping Ukraine, and maybe they do it, maybe that's a smart move. He's not telling anybody. They should have at least 30, 40,000 soldiers on planes right now headed to Ukraine and parking them in front of Russians and then letting the Russians know if you want to start something, here we are. I did see where they have plane loads of what the news calls lethal military assistance, including ammunition, maybe some rockets and cannons and other types of military aid to give to the Ukrainian soldier. But I don't think that's going to be enough. I think that it's going to have to be boots on the ground so that Putin will see that there are soldiers that are out there that are being forced to shed blood and take blood, make blood. And maybe Putin might decide, okay, it's not worth it. Because once the war starts involving U.S. troops and Russians, then it's on. And once it gets on, I don't know what it'll take to stop it before a whole bunch of people get killed. So I don't know if Putin wants to risk that. Anyway, that's the only thing I've seen that was of any concern to me. And again, I usually troll the news every week to see if there's anything in the news about issues concerning the African-American community, and I just hadn't seen any new stuff. I mean, they're still talking about the failure of the voting rights bill, but I think for now, for this Congress anyway, it's dead in the water. I don't think those senators that decided they weren't going to support it, and that's all the Republicans and a couple of the one Democrat and one independent, that's Manchin, and he's an independent, and Sistema, and she's a deep Democrat, but they're not going to change their mind. So anyway, Ms. Piyaki, how are you doing this evening? And again, you know, whatever's on your mind, you can respond to what I talked about, but you know, I just want to throw that out there. So tell me about it. What's on your mind this evening, sir?
Well, good evening to you and your guests. I don't have too much to speak on. You know, you talking about Ukraine. You know, they talk about the Jewish Holocaust, but you know, during World War II, over 12 million Ukrainians was killed by the Russians in their Holocaust, which would be over double than what they talk about the Jews in Germany. If it hadn't been for Russia joining in with the United States, Britain, and France, Germany would have been running Europe now. And Germany would have probably took Russia too. The United States and its allies would not have been able to defeat Germany by itself. Germany was a heck of a war machine. And their leader was very, very strategist in how he carried out the war. He made some mistakes, but overall, it was something else. But hopefully things and cooler heads prevail. I don't give much consideration with the Biden administration because they made big enough blunders in Afghanistan, as far as I'm concerned, looking at what's going on with the economy and these other things. I have very little confidence in this man. But you got to live with what you got. So I'll pass it on to Brother Bay, if he's around, and see how he's doing in managing of this cold weather that's came upon the country. Where you go, Mr. Washington?
Yeah, Shake John Kennebay has not shown up yet, but I hope he will. But I do want to welcome Dr. Nobles. That's Calvin Nobles.
Yeah,
that's
great.
Tonight. And you certainly want to welcome him, but we'll go ahead and go around the table. And next will be Jesus Muhammad Ali. Mr. Jesus Muhammad Ali, how are you tonight? And welcome again to the show. And I'd like to hear your comments. And then we're going to pass it on to Dr. Nobles. And maybe in the next few minutes, we may see others join. But again, before I do turn over to you, Mr. Jesus, I just want to say, Dr. Nobles, welcome to the show, and certainly glad to have you back in the family room tonight. And so thank you for joining us.
Well, thank you, and thank everybody for calling.
All right, thank you, sir. Okay, Sheikh, Mr. Jesus Muhammad Ali, it's your turn, you're up, and what are your thoughts? Could you please speak a little bit louder? A little louder.
Yes, sir. Assalamu alaikum and greetings of peace and paradise. So, assalamu alaikum. I've been listening to the program and listening to some of the comments. Brother Piyaki brings a very good point out when it comes to the influence of Germany and what Germany and then the history of Ukraine as it applies to Russia. Russia has been very, very aggressive, and they were the ones who destabilized Afghanistan, which America wound up going in after they had destabilized it. But Russia is, and their influence, and right now what seems to be in my following the news is that that Russia, since they have allied themselves with China in the past 5 or 6 years, and they have become what is called OPEC Plus, because China built a pipeline to exploit the Black Hills of Russia. And then Russia has been very busy, just like China has been busy utilizing its about $4 trillion, I think they say, they in trade with America, and spent another $1.5 trillion, reinforcing their military presence. But Russia, too, has been... about 5 years ago, I was in the Emirates, and I was listening to some of the programs being broadcast in the BBC from that side of the world. And President Putin was talking about he wanted to establish a Europe, what he called a Asian Union. And just like, Afghanistan. That's another. They have recently brought Russian troops in. They have invited Afghanistan to invite. They once were part of Russia too, under the formerly Soviet Union, and as and President Putin has gone on record as saying the worst day of his life was when the fall of the Soviet Union. What I'm hearing is that the line in the sand that he has drawn is that he just wants assurances, and that Ukraine is not going to become a part of the NATO alliance, and that to him, you know, all he's saying, he just wants an assurance. And so he's saying that he's not really the aggressor in this. He just wants an assurance. And as, you know, America, too, has billions of dollars invested in the Ukraine as far as their natural resources, Dr. Marshall, he pointed out, you know, Ukraine is a very mineral-rich country, and having formerly been a part of the Soviet Union, one of the things I noticed that France said a couple of days ago, they need to establish their own dialogue with Russia, because America, they said, as far as America's trade alliances with Russia, I think they're number 26 or something on the list, whereas and the French president made a statement. He was saying, as far as the borders, you know, it's that, you know, they are it's continuous. I mean, it's you know, they are part. That's Russia is a part of their continent, and so they you know. But you know, France was suffered a negative backlash when America cut a deal with Australia. Or a multi-billion-dollar contract for submarines, and France was very put out about that, and that was very recent history too, and France is speaking out, you know, and kind of breaking ranks a bit. But the thing of it is that about people who are following this closely, is that there's this gas pipeline that has already been constructed and then waiting to be sanctioned by Germany, and they're saying that if America is saying and trying to and pretty much get most of the NATO alliances to sign on, you know, definitively to say that if they do invade the Ukraine, they're going to they're not going to open that pipeline. But I was listening to a program from a lady who's actually she's a German herself, and she was saying that is, you know, the only way that Germany can really follow through with that, they would have to declare that pipeline eminent domain, because that's a independent contract. Those are independent contractors who have that pipeline, and it's complete. It's just waiting for a sanction to open up. So they're saying that Russia, and that's one of the, as a matter of fact, President Trump, that was one of his objections. He was pulling his troops out of 12,000 troops out of Germany because of that pipeline, and President Trump, his perceptions about Russia's relationship with Europe, okay, and becoming dominant to a certain extent. But then I've even heard certain things that Russia wants to intimidate and say, you talk about so much what's going over here in Europe, you know what I mean, what's going on down in South America, and they have been indirectly making threats of saying what they can what Russia can do in terms of influencing some of America's South American allies. So, I mean, I'm just, and I've been kind of following this too, but, you know, I'm certainly interested in hearing what Dr. Noble's got to say, because Dr. Noble's has, I think, more credentials than any of us on this program when it comes to the military field. Thank you for listening, and look forward to our next.
Okay, well, thank you so much, and I do want to welcome my dear beloved sister, Officer Stephanie, who has also joined us, and so welcome, Stephanie, and hope you and
thank
your family, your husband are doing well tonight, and we're going to go around the table. Dr. Novus, again, welcome to you, and I certainly want to hear your thoughts on this subject or any other topic that you would like to bring on board to the show tonight. Go right ahead.
Good evening to everybody. I'm glad to be on the show once again. And I would tell you the Ukraine-Russian situation is intriguing in terms of what it means for the U.S., but more importantly, what it means for the international community. I know earlier today I got an email from a buddy of mine who works in the U.S. I'm referring to that the United States has sent aid to Ukraine. And to me, that's indicative of a country that's lacking resources or a country that's preparing for the worst. It's still too early to tell at this point, but I don't want to say that I believe that war is imminent. I don't see that yet. I also want to call our attention to every time there's something catastrophic in this country, it's always like we have a distraction that's going on. We think about what's happened with solar winds that hit the country and the federal agencies back in December of last year. You know, we was caught up in COVID. We were caught up with societal issues going on, racial inequities going on in this country, and a very obtuse administration at the time. And so we were not even paying attention to what was going on with solar winds. And we know that solar winds, we know that there's countries that was tied to solar winds. And so let's not forget that either. So all these things really play into a larger picture of how the U.S. is really eyeing Russia. But I would be honest with you, right now I believe that Russia is a distraction of what's happening over in the Pacific theater with China and what they're doing with their military forces. See, from on the that front, Russia is partnering with China. And they're actually building a stronger military presence in that part of the world, and that's also calls attention to what we need to do as a country. How do we want to address that relationship? But also, let's not forget the South China Sea is probably one of the most tumultuous areas right now in terms of national security, because we have the Chinese government that's actually building man-made islands, and they're actually extending them out. And so that changes things, because now where the U.S. military, we always, especially U.S. Navy, we always believe in the 12 nautical mile rule. Anything inside of 12 nautical miles is somebody's a sovereign country territory. Anything outside of that, we refer to that as international waters. So how do we actually deal with this when they're changing the geographical structure of, you know, islands that we dictate as being a certain geographical size and shape, but they believe that the new geographical shape is actually, you know, what we should consider. So there's so much going on out in that part of the world that I don't think the U.S. should take all of our focus and focus on Ukraine. And I do believe that there's some things that the U.S. can do in terms of dealing with Russia. For instance, we already know that we have sanctions on Russia. This could be a ploy by the Russian government to reduce some of those sanctions. And let's not forget, you know, that there's a lot of Russian, you know, companies who's been caught up lately doing, like, some of these nefarious cyber crimes that's also facing charges by the U.S. government. So all of these things are coming to a head, and I'm not sure if the conflict with Ukraine is really where we should be focusing the most of our attention, yet we should be focusing some. I just think that we have to be careful and not be distracted by a greater cause like what's happening in the South China Sea. I do feel that we need to pay close attention to what's happening in the South China Sea, because, you know, what China is showing us that they're not really interested in having a global force in terms of a military presence, but they are interested in having a regional force in the side of the South China Sea in the Pacific Theater. Those things really matters because you look at the supply chain issues that we're having in this country, you look at the pandemic issue we're having in this country, and you can just see that a lot of this stuff, though not localized to the United States, we're having to be a global partner in all of this, and it's impacting us. So I say all that to say this, let's not get channelized on what's happening in Ukraine, even though it's important. I do not personally believe it is the number one priority for the U.S. right now.
Very well said. Very well said. Thank you. Thank you so much, Dr. Novin. Before I bring on Sister Stephanie, I just want to announce to our Internet listeners, and if you're not speaking, put your phone on mic because, on mute because I'm hearing some background static or interference. Okay. So if you can, if you got any possibility of any background noise going on or something going on contributing to the noise factor, if you mute your phone, thank you. Okay, so for those who are listening via the Internet, you've heard the conversation so far. We're halfway into the program. I do plan to close out at around 9 o'clock tonight. But I do want to invite anyone listening via the Internet to call in and become part of our conversation. The number is 657-383-0671. That's 657-383-0671. We have caller's choice tonight, so if you would like to talk about something other than what you heard us talking about so far, you're perfectly free to introduce another topic, and if you'd like, we'll respond and give you our feedback. Having said that, welcome again, Stephanie, and we'd certainly like to hear your comments on this or anything else that might be on your mind this evening. Go right ahead.
Thank you. Hi, everyone. I hope everyone is having a wonderful evening. First of all, I would like to say thank you, Dr. Nobles. You're so intelligent. And I always love your input. If you were running for president, I would vote for you. I sure would. Second of all, I would like to say last week, I hung up the phone because Mr. Pianke started talking about only 3% of whites were slave owners. And I said, wow, he's rewriting history. And then, but I hung up when he started talking about all the black slave owners. I don't want nobody planting no seeds of that are not true in my head, and I'm not going to sit there and listen to it. But I think you're very intelligent, Marshall, my brother-in-law. And I just thank you for having the show anyway. Okay. Well, everybody have a wonderful evening.
Okay, Stephen, thank you very much.
I'm going to make me a fish sandwich. Thank you.
Okay, well, enjoy your fish sandwich. And please enjoy your fish sandwich. We certainly happy that you did spend some time with us tonight. And after you made your sandwich and so forth, we'll be going on for about another 25 minutes. So certainly
I'm
we may have a chance. Oh, you're going to stick? Okay. Well, I do want to say one thing. And as a historian, I have to be honest and tell you, first of all, that figure probably is not far from being correct. If it may be correct, because most of the white folks didn't have the kind of money to be able to invest in slaves. Just like today, even the white people, most white people don't have a stock portfolio. And having slaves back in those days from about 1700 up through 1865 was like having a stock portfolio. Most people just did not have that kind of expendable income or capital to be able to invest in slaves, okay? And so that was a big business, but everybody could not be an investor in that business. The other thing is, and I think it's true, that there were black slave owners. I mean, that's historically a fact. But the other thing is, and it's ironic, There were
okay,
people that.
Let me
finish one thing. Now, I'm not saying there were a lot of them, because there weren't a lot of them. But I have a friend, I want to say this, a very close friend of mine. He's actually one of my best friends, and he's a minister. He's an Islamic minister not too far from me. He's over in Columbia, South Carolina. And about 7-8 years ago, I happened to be shopping in Walmart. And sometimes when I go over there, I go through the DVD bins just to be doing something. I came across this DVD, and actually I believe Danny Glover played in this movie, and I would like to get my DVD back because I haven't really been pushing them to return it, but I'd love to have it because this was a story, a very interesting story about slavery times. And there was this white woman that owned all these slaves, but you know who was actually running the plantation? Danny Glover. He was actually the real slave master. Now, was he a cruel slave master? No. But he was a firm slave master. He didn't actually have legal papers to the slaves, told the white woman what to do. And she told him that he had authority to tell the slaves whatever he wanted them to do to make the plantation run profitably. Now, did that mean that he was chaining the people up in the cellar or whipping them on the whipping post? No, in that particular movie, there was no instance of that going on because he knew how to use psychology. See, so there were different levels of treatment of slaves. All the slaves historically were not treated brutally because some of these slave masters have a certain way of using different kind of psychology, rewards and punishments, to get the work out. That's all they wanted was the work out of the slaves. So if they could give the slaves a turkey during Christmas, a bottle of whiskey on the holidays and on Sunday, and they did the work, that's all they cared about. They didn't necessarily, unless they were Simon the Greek, want to tie slaves up and beat them and whip them. That wasn't what they bought those slaves to be doing to them. And they didn't want to mar these slaves up with a lot, even though it was happening, with a lot of slave whip stripes on their back. So that when the slave traders came around and the people might have needed to sell some slaves to get some more money to buy some more land to plant, they didn't want to have a bunch of slaves that looked like they were rebellious and had to be whipped. Not that they had to be whipped, but you know what I mean? So this whole issue of slavery, and this is my field. And matter of fact, right now as we speak, I have a class going on right now, and we're talking about Reconstruction and the aftermath of slavery and how the people like the red shirts and the Knights of Camellia, the White Camellia, and the Klan was trying to put black people back in slavery. But why were they trying to put black people back in slavery? Because the people who they worked for, who were the capitalists in the South, needed those people back on the plantation to get those plantations running again. So this whole thing is really complex, and the last thing I want to say about it, and I'm never going to defend slavery, never, but the whole thing about it, you have people passing as white folks that own slaves. In other words, you have people that you, if you saw them on the bus and you were to be back in segregation days, when, you know, I grew up in segregation days back in Alabama, they had a white line painted across about third of the bus was reserved for black people, two-thirds reserved for white people. And if this person was sitting up there on the white side in the front, you wouldn't have noticed that he was no white man. But in fact, his great-grandmother might have been a black woman. So technically, he was a Negro. But yet, that kind of person could run around and go to the bank, get money, buy a bunch of slaves, and most people never would have known it. So you had black folks that you could see were black, down in South Carolina, but in Louisiana, that actually owned slaves. But you also had what I would say these pretend white folks that look white that owned slaves. So I'm not trying to negate anything you're saying, and I'm not necessarily trying to defend what Ms. Bianchi said. I just want to know, I want everybody to know the historical reality supports the fact that there were black people, whether they look black or not, that owned slaves, and a whole lot of white folks didn't even have the money to pay their regular bills, much less to invest in buying property called slaves. But that's just the reality. So I would not necessarily be angry because that's the truth, because it's real facts. So stay with us, Stephanie, and let's go ahead and go on back the other direction to Minister Jesus, and then we'll go to Dr. Novus again, then you again, Stephanie, and then finishing up with Ms. Bianchi. Okay, so Brother Minister Jesus Muhammad Ali, take no more than 3 or 4 minutes so we can get everybody in, and let's see if you want to make any further comments on this.
Yes, sir. I would like to make a comment on this. Again, I have no question about the fine line detailed way in which you explained it, because, and I know that you don't, as I've known you long enough to know that you don't just make statements without historical of the statements you make. You know, you take history too serious, and I know you do that. And I know that religiously about you. But I'll say this, though. I just want to add one thing here, is that, you know, even if you watch the movie Django, they talk about how, and even Master Farah Muhammad in the teachings of the Nation of Islam, and, you know, what they talked about in some of their fundamental lessons was fear. You know, fear, you know, they were more interested in, and that's where the Knights of Columbus and people like all like Pat, they were, that's what their job was, to keep, you know, they knew that the slaves were sometimes in great numbers, and so therefore, you know, having them to be intimidated and fearful, you know, here they're 10,000 miles from, you know, their native homes and things like that, and they've been, you know, captives, and they had, so we had so many different languages, and they try to, you know, keep us. But the main thing I want to mention is the fear element, okay? And so that's how they control, you know, they know they were many times greatly outnumbered. You know, when it comes back, or put by you know, on those plantations, it was still by proportion to how many of them were there. You know, so fear was, and just like in the lessons they were telling us, why does he fear him? He said, put fear in him when he was a little boy. He said, why does he fear him now? He said, because he was taught to eat the wrong food. So these were fundamental building blocks of insight of the Nation of Islam in terms of studying, you know, slave trade, all back to John Hawkins, you know, in 1555, you know, and how he was a slave trader, went over there and learned to speak the language. So, you know, slaves, and the first Fortune 500 company in this country was slave trade, just like Professor Abouye mentioned, is that, Not a lot of people had money, but, you know, you got to also look at, cause I've been watching, you know, quite a few of these documentaries here recently, and that is, you know, another form of slavery, because even in the Emancipation Proclamation was signed by Lincoln, he did not outlaw slavery, you know, and these chain gangs, you know, actually, in many cases, replaced, you know, because they had a lot of work to be done. And they were industrialists, and they needed this labor. And so, they, you know, if you steal a pig, okay, I think you can, that's like 5 years, okay. So they're on the chain gang. So they had these, you know, draconian laws in place. You know, but the main thing is to get the labor. You know, it's like saying, talk about indentured slaves. I mean, Europeans were brought over here in order to cover their fare. They didn't have their fare, so they agreed to be, you know, indentured slaves. Okay, so, and anyway, so it's always, you gotta, just like right today, even today, you know, 10% of the 1% control 99% of the wealth. And then you got these young college kids and got all these debt, what, $1.7 trillion of college debt on everything. So these are very, you know, very, very consequential things, you know, in the society that's causing the society to be greatly dysfunctional. And President Biden was trying to pass that, what, $3.5 trillion. You know, America has a $300 trillion economy. Okay, you know, so that wasn't such a huge step, you know what I mean, for them to step out. And then you got this global warming. But I really appreciate Dr. Noble's input, because that really sounds pretty. I was pretty much on point with what he was saying, is that Putin is using the Ukraine as a distraction, you know, to get him to release some of the sanctions that are being put against Russia. You know what I mean? But like he says, you know, China, you're right, China is very active, you know, very active. Okay. And, you know, so anyway, I'm gonna give the floor to anybody else who want to make some additional comments. But thank you very much.
Okay. Well, thank you so much. And I do want to welcome Sheikh John Kennebay. He has arrived in the room. So thank you very much for your comments, Minister Jesus. And we want to go ahead and hear from Sheikh John Kennebay. So please go ahead. What we were, he just dropped off. No, he's back. Okay. What we had been talking about was a number of different things. And I'm not going to try to recap everything that we said, but we began talking about the issue over there with the Ukraine. And I'm not going to cover all what we said. So if you got any thoughts on that, we sort of want to hear whatever you have to say. And then we had a really brief conversation. I just responded to something that my sister-in-law said concerning slave ownership back in the slave days. And it had many different facets. And that's part of what I teach in my African-American history class, is the issue of slavery and a lot of what it entailed, the economics of it. I do a whole lecture about the economics of slavery and so forth. So I just wanted to, you know, share that with you so you know some of what we talked about. And of course, what you just heard for yourself, what Minister Jesus had to say, so I don't have to recap that. But welcome, and we'd just like to hear whatever's on your mind.
Evening, everyone. What is question? I have a lot of questions. One is that they said that George Washington cut down the cherry tree. We know George Washington was a man of general, and his works in that arena. The cherry tree. What's the truth behind him chopping down the cherry tree?
Well, let me just say this: when I was a child. And, of course, one of the main things that elementary school education is designed for, and it certainly was designed for it in the parochial Catholic school that I went to, is to teach the children moral values. And so we were taught about this cherry tree that George Washington was, and I'm maybe paraphrasing it, but he was asked, you know, I guess by his father, who cut down this cherry tree. And George said that he could not tell a lie. He said, I cannot tell a lie. I cut down the cherry tree. So the whole issue was not so much about the cherry tree itself, but about the fact that George stood up and put himself on report and admitted that he was the one that cut it down because he was not going to tell a lie. That's what I got out of the story. Anybody else might want to comment, but that's what I got out of the story.
I want to interject a couple other situations. The War of 1812, and then there was two treaties in the 1818. It dealt with who was entitled to the land. Was it British or the Spanish? And there was a couple of signs, and the way the treaties came out, Churchill said that they did a masterful job. So the question is that the authority to grant land, who had title to land, the grant land to anybody, who had, how did they acquire it? If the war of 1812 had anything to do with it.
I think if you go back, I'm not going to try to give you a history lesson, but I think if you go back, you know, to history and look at what was going on, first of all, you know, when America defeated Britain in the Revolutionary War, in 1783, when the war ended, and of course they finally agreed on the Treaty of Paris, that recognized the colonies as being free of Great Britain in 1783. It says the Treaty of Paris was signed in Paris by representatives of King George III and representatives of the United States, officially ended the war. And, of course, part of that was that America now was free to go ahead and establish their own government. And it took several years before the government was actually formed and the Constitution, you know, was officially the law of the land in 1789. But the fact of the matter is that up until that War of 1812, there was still a lot of friction. And the conflict was prompted by restrictions on U.S. trade resulting from the British blockading of French and Allied ports. And this was all tied in with the wars going over in Europe, the Napoleonic Wars. And there were other things that were going on. The British and the Canadians were supporting the American Indians who were trying to resist the colonials, previous colonials. They were now not colonials anymore, trying to push Western wars into Indian lands. So basically the whole thing was that you still had resistance to American independence from the British. And of course, that area, the Northwest Territory area, it was still kind of up for grabs. So the British did not want to lose all that land, even though they had agreed to let the colonists have their freedom. So they, in other words, defended what they considered to be their right to be in possession of some of those lands and to control some of those ports and the waterways. And so they decided to take a chance and fight. And, you know, as history says, you know, they had a good chance of winning down there in New Orleans. Of course, one of, you know, the big naval battles ended with them being pushed out. But also they got as far as the U.S. Capitol and burnt the White House. But it was all about, you know, money. It was all about Great Britain not wanting to give up, you know, that power that they had had to be able to extract resources from American land. But anyway, we've only got about 5 minutes left. I don't know if that answer might have answered your question, but did you want to make any more comments about it before we try to go around quickly one more time? Because even though we'll go over nine.
Not tonight to follow up. One reason I want to follow up is about the Navy and the role of the Marines and the transportation system, which was by way of seas, and the right to travel the seas under your flag and things of that nature. So there are some questions I have in reference to that, but that's for another day.
Okay. All right. And, of course, we have another naval historian president, and he may want to comment on my statement about the Navy involvement in the War of 1812, and that's Dr. Novus. When we get back around to Dr. Novus, if he wants to, give us some insight on that, we certainly welcome that. So what we're going to do is we're going to go around. We're going to give Mr. Jesus the opportunity very briefly, because I wanted to end at 9, but we'll probably go to 9:15 to make any final comments. And then we'll go to Sister Stephanie, and then Dr. Nobles, and then Mr. Bianchi. So, Mr. Jesus, would you like to take it?
I'm just going to pass for the most part, but I just want to express my profound appreciation for your history lesson that we've been afforded by virtue of Dr. And Brother Kenneth Bay's question and the insight that you provided without us having to actually go to a civics class and history class. Well, thank you, Brother, for your magnanimous insight provided to everybody on the program. I know I'm just, other than that acknowledgement, I'm just going to pass and wish everybody a very pleasant and beautiful weekend. You know, we all have to constantly remind ourselves that we are all survivors of this pandemic. This pandemic has been merciless, you know, when it comes to taking lives. And I've been touched by even recently this week, my close friend of mine. So, you know, we all, I mean, and I know probably everybody on the program probably has lost close family members in this last year, 2 years. Just, you know, I mean, and we, you know, so wishing and praying, keep my prayers to everybody within the sound of my listening voice, you know, and, stay safe, and you know, please remember your health. You know, and that's one of the things. You didn't have to be a Muslim. All you just by virtue of a brother's dietary discipline, eating one meal a day or whatever. You know, you knew that brother. He was a Muslim. Just, you know, and How to Eat to Live was the first book. He just came back to eating. You know, even before the Bohemian diet. You know, How to Eat to Live. So the Honorable Elijah Muhammad, his claim to being Allah's messenger, you know, you didn't have to go down there and decide you're going to take 300 newspapers in order to get yourself a copy of How to Eat to Live. You know, so with that, I'm going to just say, Assalamu alaikum and peace to the screen of peace in paradise. And I wish everybody the very best.
Thank you, Minister Jesus, and we certainly extend our condolences and our sympathy to you concerning the loss of your dear friend. I've lost several friends recently. It seems like my age group, my class, is losing someone every few months, and we just lost in the last 4 months three of my classmates who were close to me, and I definitely send you our condolences. And so, again, we want to go ahead and hear from Sister Stephanie, and then we'll close with Brother Nobles and then Ms. Bianca. Sister Stephanie, would you like to make any additional comments to add on to anything you said or comment on anything you heard?
Yes, a little bit. First, I would like to say thank you for mentioning that. We are survivors because we are, and thank God for that. So there's a lot more we can be doing as survivors besides tearing each other down. But I stick with what I said. I don't appreciate the rewriting of history, just like when Obama made president. They start saying that Hamilton was the first black president, and also Lincoln was a black president. You know, so who did that to take away his where he made history. So in other words, they're saying he never made history. We already had black presidents. So he's before that white. If they were passing for white, they probably were white, as far as I'm concerned. But thank you all for agreeing to disagree. Okay. God bless all.
Okay, thanks. Thank you, Stephanie. We appreciate your comments and appreciate your feedback. And we'll go ahead and move around because we're about to close. Dr. Noble, certainly want to hear closing comments from you at this time.
Thank you, Brother Cabinet. Great dialogue tonight. Very interesting points made. The one thing that I want to highlight is that when we talk about slavery, You know, by looking at it in terms of numbers, looking at the numbers statistically of slave owners doesn't tell the story. Because even though there were so few slave owners, to the average slave, any white man was a slave owner. They could not tell who were slave owners and who were not. Of course, you can tell by the attire of some people, but at the time, any man was in charge over a slave, any man. And so they, to the slave, in their minds, when they saw any white man, that they automatically gave that white man due diligence, authority over them because of the predicaments the slave was in at the time. But the point that I'm trying to make here is that if you just look at it by the numbers of slave owners, it doesn't tell the story. The impact of slavery is everlasting in this country because we have never owned up to it. And I'm not saying this to make people feel bad, but when you do, as a country, when you do wrong, you owe right to the people that you did wrong. And I'm not talking reparations either. I'm talking in terms of just acknowledging the horrific treatment in this country and how it has cascaded into our lives today. And we have to realize that until we as a country can embrace it, we won't be able to get over it. Once we embrace it, we'll be able to get over it. But everybody wants to tell the story their way. And there's only one way it can be told. That's the factual way. Regardless of who's telling it, it needs to be told factually. And it's hurt, as a researcher, it hurts me when I see parents who want this, who don't want that part of our nation told, the story of our nation told. It should be told. Just like when we went to Vietnam, that story needs to be told. When we went to Afghanistan and Iraq, that story needs to be told. The things that happened on this land needs to be told. The story, you know, the vanishing of the Indians. We prefer to forget those things, but there's been people impacted by those things for decades and centuries. And until we acknowledge that, it's hard to push that forward. It really is. And, I mean, I had to do a lot of soul searching about this lately because I kept, you know, for me, you look at my life and people say, why are you concerned? Because I see the post-traumatic impact on people when you don't address adversity. We have to address it. This country has not, we're a great country, and I'd rather be nowhere else. But I also believe when you do wrong, you have to admit to it. And that's how you heal.
Well, I have to comment and say, hear, hear. You know, that's what, you know, over in the British Parliament, some of the movies I've been watching, when the person makes a great speech and the people want to show their support for it and approval for it, instead of them giving a big round of applause, they'll say, hear, hear. And so I say that. That was a wonderful comment. Thank you, Dr. Nobles. Thank you very much. And so... Yes, sir. So closing out, and let me just say this, too, because I need to say this, and this is directed to my sister-in-law, but this in general. The one thing that I feel very strongly about, having been brought up in Alabama during the segregation years, the idea of something happened to me, of me walking down the street as a young fella, maybe probably around 10 years old in my hometown in Tuskegee, Alabama, and having an older man who was a white man because I was just a boy. And the sidewalk was wide enough for two people to pass, one going in one direction, the other going in another direction, without them touching each other. The white man told me to get completely off the sidewalk so he wouldn't have to worry about me touching him. And he said whenever, and I'll never forget this, he said whenever a white person is on the sidewalk coming in the opposite direction, you get completely off the sidewalk. And I never forgot that. And as Dr. Novus just mentioned, it wasn't really about the people that had papers on slaves that could be considered to be actually slave owners, but every person that was not a white person, especially if they were a slave, but even if they were a free person that was down south, they were taught to look at every white man as being their master. And they were even taught to call white people master, even if the white person was what they call, I don't like to say poor white trash, I don't like to use that term, but even if they were the poor, what they call side busting white people that worked side by side with the black people in the field, the white people told those black folks to call those white men master. So that whole idea of white supremacy and that whole idea of white power over black people still has its residual effects. And unfortunately, and I'll say this and I'll turn it over to Ms. Bianca for the close, it seems like what Dr. Novus is suggesting is being pushed back on in the name of this anti-critical race theory, which we won't get into that tonight. But that's just a buzzword for saying they want to cover up the horrendous and horrific history of the treatment of black people in this country. Because now, in a lot of the schools, any books that talk about that treatment, there are moves to try to get those books out of the school libraries and out of the curriculum. And oftentimes, and I say this in closing, I wonder when it's going to get to the point where somebody says, well, let's take Booker T. Washington's book out of the school curriculum. And, you know, he's one of the most popular black figures among white folks. And yet it may come to that because he talks about how that his slave owners daughter, who was a school marm, who taught in a one-room school, told him that he could not stand by the window and hear any of the lessons because Negroes weren't supposed to be taught. And that's the condemnation of that system. And I'm just wondering if one day somebody will say, well, we don't even want our little white children to hear about that little black boy being treated like that. And I tell you this in closing, question about whether or not that same woman taught Booker T. Washington how to write, because he actually did learn how to write as a child. This was sometime after slavery, because it was forbidden for them to be taught how to write. But somebody said, well, maybe she had, being a teacher, taught him how to write. And one of the relatives of the people that owned, and I hate to use that word because I don't believe a human being can own another human being, but was the slave master, and I were in communication some many years ago. In fact, it was interesting because I was on a Navy mission over in Greece on the island of Crete at that time, and I had a way of being able to access email using the Greek telephone system and a device that I had. And so I would get my personal email. No military email was involved in that. I have to go on the military base to get that. But this lady sent me an email, and she said that woman, because she was married into that slave owner's family, said she would have never taught a Negro And the word that I think she used wasn't even Negro, how to read or how to write. So that whole idea that these white people, whether they own slaves or not, saw black people as being beneath them or taught that black people beneath them, even if the white person were dirt poor. And black people were taught, like they tried to tell me, move aside, get off the sidewalk. If a white man, no matter how poor he is, comes down the street. Those are the kinds of things that don't need to be swept under the rug. But it seems like there's a move now to sweep those kinds of things under the rug. I suppose with that, Ms. Bianca, for our closing comment, we are bringing you back to finish the program tonight for us.
Well, you know, what's never told us about the number of mulatto women that's half black and half white that own the slave in South Carolina. According to the 1856 census, 42% of free blacks owned them, and 64% of these slaveholders were women. Down in the New Orleans area, 28% of free blacks owned slaves, and 80% of those were women. In Africa, Africa taught the world slavery. In Ghana, they had slavery going back as far back as 2000 before the Common Era, according to Ghanaians themselves. My wife is an Akamu. The Akamu fought the Ashantis for Akim, A-K-I-M, in Ghana for a long time. The British took 120 years to stop the Ashanti, the Akan, from participating in indigenous slavery, especially in the Northern Protectorate. From 1808 to 1928, even into probably the early 1930s. So it was a business. That's what it was. It was a business. Human beings do. I often think if I was back then during business, I probably would have had some also. It depends on what business it was at. I hire employees, and some of them say they work like Hebrew slaves. But other than that, you know, a good thing I heard is that Nigeria, with Dalike Dangote, who was probably the richest black person in the world, probably worth about $30 billion and climbing. He's building the largest oil refinery in the world there in Nigeria. Larger than anything that America has, or even the air-producing states. So that should be very, very interesting. They got a good policy for hiring because they have to use a lot of foreign contractors in different aspects of the construction. But for every foreign worker that they have, they have to hire four indigenous Nigerians, which is good. And he's also opening an office in New York to take advantage of all the rich opportunities that exist here in the United States. Aliki Dangote, a black man. You have another Nigeria owns the second largest airport in England, Gatland Airport. And, of course, they involved in many other ventures. And I think that that country is probably going to be, well, it will be, Mr. Washington, the second largest population on earth in the end of this century. Every five people you count want to be a Nigerian. So that's going to be interesting. And, you know, the interesting thing is how well-educated they are, multi-degreed, and they're very highly business savvy here in the United States. They don't complain about the things that black Americans, native black Americans, complain about. And I think that I see native black American children are starting to get involved in areas of learning that they not nowhere near where they should. I think if Donald Trump school choice and vouchers was to come to fruition, that would greatly change those percentages and improve heavily on that data. You know, like schools there in St. Louis, Normandy High School, all black high school, where 5% of the high school population is proficient in math and less than 14% is proficient in reading. Yet when they come time for George Floyd commemoration day, they take off half a day and march around the campus and so forth. That's a waste of time. Those kids should be learning. When do you start taking on idols of that caliber to celebrate and waste time? But if that's what parents want their children to do, that's them. Mine wouldn't participate in that. No way. And once again, the Biden administration, when you talk about Russia and whatever deals that he reneged on, Biden, where Russia is now building a pipeline to supply our European allies with natural gas, which is taking away the business from American producers, American shippers, Americans who was involved in freezing the gas, shipping it, and all the downstream activities that go along with that. That was an industry that we had, and I don't think we're going to get that back. That don't make any sense whatsoever. Foolish. But other than that, we have to keep our eyes open and hope for the best, not for war. I think things could be done in a better way, but I also kind of understand Russia's position. You wouldn't want China to put a missile base in Venezuela. Heck, we damn near went to war when Khrushchev inkling on putting missiles, which they did have, in Cuba, which is, what, 90 miles off the shore, the furthest tip of Florida? So much for that. So I'll talk to you guys later. Have a safe week, and Mr. Washington, you should be progressing very fast on that piece that you're going to do for us with your saxophone. I'm excited.
Well, let me just conclude to say one thing. I'm glad you brought up that point, because I did something today that I have been wanting to do for months. I went and got a tenor sax because I love my alto, and I've gotten to where I feel comfortable enough on the alto that I could graduate to the big boy, because that tenor is like a big boy compared to that alto. So hopefully when I do my next piece, because you heard a little bit at the beginning of the show of my alto, the piece that I played, but I am working now, and I just got this today, and I played it a little bit before the show started, to go ahead and do a piece medley on my tenor. So look forward to that next Saturday. All right?
Okay, I'm gonna be in great expectations.
Yeah, well, I'm going to be working to make sure your expectations are fulfilled, because I am so excited about getting up to this level where I am blowing this tenor sax now. So that's my plan, is to do a medley of some of the songs that I've been working on with my alto, but this time to do them on my tenor sax. So thank you very much for your encouragement. Everyone who joined us tonight, we want to say thank you again for joining us. We appreciate all of the comments, and we're going to close now. May God bless you with a very happy and peaceful rest of the weekend, and we hopefully will be back together on next Saturday, same place, as they say, same time, same station. So God bless, and thank you very much, and good night for tonight.